Good morning and welcome to the Innovations in Resident Civic Education Engagement from Citizen Academies to Sustained Community Engagement. My name is Sal Alvarez. I'll be the moderator this morning for you in place of Norberto Duenas, Deputy City Manager for the City of San Jose. We have some wonderful speakers and a panel here for you this morning. I'd like to introduce Eduardo Moet from the City of Santa Ana, Monique Sang, she's from the City of Oakland, Equal Access Director, Charisse Brindell from the City of Menlo Park, and we're actually honored to have Ann Hellick this morning from the city of Ventura. So with that, we'd like to get going with Eduardo, please.
Good morning, everyone. Let me start this show. I'm going to give you a short presentation on a unique program in the City of Santa Ana. My name is Gerardo Moet. I'm the head of the City of Santa Ana's Park, Recreation, and Community Services Agency. I've been there worked for the City of Santa Ana for the last 20 years and the last five as the head of the Park, Recreation, Community Services Agency. As of July, I also oversee the library because of the budget situation, so I'm also in charge of the library. In fact, that's where my office is at. Love the library, so I have no problem. There are some, probably not enough for everyone. I have about 25 copies of my PowerPoint. It's just about 8 slides. But I also have business cards with my email address. If you're interested in the PowerPoint, I'd be happy to email it to anyone that's interested. I'm here to tell you a little bit about this particular unique program that we started that we put together in the spring of 2008. It's called the Youth and Local Government Initiative, and it was an 8-week program. A couple of city council members and myself went to the very well-known over 50-year program, YMCA program of the government day in Sacramento where the students take over government. They were very inspired and they asked me if I could do something for city government, something similar to get to light a fire for youth involvement in city government. And we put together this program, we raised some private monies, we didn't use any city government monies, and we put together this 8-week program for 35 high school students from San Diego Unified School District. It's a fairly large urban school district. We're all 11th graders. And we had a wonderful time and a wonderful experience, and there's a lot of lessons learned that I'd like to share with you today about that program and our future thoughts for continuing this type of effort in the City of Santa Ana. So I believe that this Youth and Local Government Initiative, again, it's an 8-week program, is a good model to teach young people how to get involved in their local government, how to teach them how City Hall works, how to approach solving community problems is also a very, very important thing that we learned that the students get a lot out of, and how to create policy, how to become future leaders. One of the big things that was a challenge for us is getting past the intimidation factor in City Hall. Part of the way we approach this is that it was important for us, realizing that it is a challenge to get high school students or residents, for that matter, comfortable in asking questions on how city government works or getting involved. And so we put all our heads together. We developed a planning committee, and I chaired the committee on things that would make sense for the young people to really get engaged, to really develop a passion, to have fun in this program, to want more. And one of the things that was part of that whole thing was selecting the right students that wanted to come. And so we had an application process, we had a selection process. So thought needs to be given to that. I'm a big believer that even though, you know, Santa Ana is known for being a very high percentage of the Hispanic population, a lot of the young people were Hispanic, but as much of diversity as possible is good. Gender diversity is good. Geographic diversity is good among different high schools. And it's also the social networking that occurs is also very important to this program. And here you see a picture of students getting to know each other on the first day, the orientation day, which was March of 08. And it's very important to, in the curriculum of the 8-week program, is to develop interesting seminars. And we started planting the seeds where there were the two curricular themes. The first one was get to know how the city government is structured. And the best way to get them to know that is to matching them up with coaches, city employees, department heads, city attorney, head of planning and building, and so forth. And that was really key, and I'll be mentioning a little bit more about that. But also, since they were going to end, we end the 8-week program with a mock council meeting where they develop an agenda, they develop the staff reports, they actually vote on policy. We televised it as well. We videotaped it, made them feel very, very special. We flattered them. We're saying, you're our next mayor, members of council, or you're my next replacement, the head of Parks and Rec, or the next city manager. But because we wanted to give everyone roles, sometimes there were, in the Mont Council, there actually were two city managers, there were two city attorneys, there was only one mayor and one representative of each of the wards in council, because we made use of the council chambers and the dais and all of that. It was just fascinating. They had a great time. We invited their parents and their friends in the audience for that mock council meeting. They all dressed up with ties and just was a wonderful time. And when they needed help in figuring out what issues to develop, we had come up with kind of planned out issues that we felt that they would select from a menu that would really be interested, that they would be interesting for them, that they would vote on. For example, hookah bars was one of the issues that they had a lively debate on, allowing them or not, land use issues, planning and building issues, permit issues. And so they got into a debate, and that was really healthy. Should the city invest in remodeling of old rec center? That was very popular among young people. Issues that were very related to young people. And so that we helped them solve problems, we helped them develop critical thinking skills, communication skills. It did wonders for their self-esteem, but primarily it broke that mystique, that intimidation. And most of all, when you're developing a program like this, you have to make sure that you keep in mind the importance of fun. Learning is the objective. And breaking down the barriers of City Hall and the intimidation is the objective. But these are high school students, they're 11th graders. And there's the importance of feeling comfortable socially is very important. And fun and interactive sessions are very important. Another key thing, don't underestimate the power of food. We fed them, and that was always, we had a 100% attendance rate. They were always there, we always had food for them. And That's why also being able to pitch this concept to your local businesses to help raise money to pay for these expenses. I'm sorry? Okay. And so I mentioned the mentorship. This is a picture of these two employees mentoring two students. They were public works civil engineers talking to the two head of public works that would be taking on that role. And again, I mentioned the importance of developing interesting seminars. We started off the whole thing with a very motivating keynote speaker that just has a passion for local government. And this was Professor Ralph Sonnenschein from California State University, Fullerton. And he just did an amazing job in breaking the ice and saying, you guys are going to have fun. This is where the rubber meets the road when it comes to government. And he just sells it so well. The sessions should be interactive. the mock council assignments, who's going to be the mayor and all that should be done early in the 8-week session so that people start getting comfortable with that role. And then we also very uniquely hired, not actually hired, it was pro bono, if you can believe it, a very good professional political consultant who did a whole seminar to them on saying, when you run for your first campaign, this is how you're going to be, you should do it, the basic 101 on running a campaign. And it was pretty amazing that we were able to do this, I thought. Again, this is a visual of the interactive seminar, people getting involved in learning about city government and how it's structured. The future, it wasn't so much that we didn't have private funds to do it again this last spring. It was because, as you probably all know, because of the horrible budget situation, there were a lot of staff reductions. And I just did not feel, when we were cutting programs, that I could tax staff at this time. But Santa Ana has been the recipient of one of the 14 communities for building a healthy community from the California Endowment. Some of you might have heard a little bit about this 10-year initiative. And because of that, we're developing a very similar program, but it's called Health and Social Responsibility for Young People, which is going to be kind of focusing more on how the role of city government on health and environmental issues that affect health through, and our goal is to have it in the summer of 2010, and it'll have a similar type of impact, but it's going to be more specialized on health. And the idea, the first one I'm going to raise money to kick it off, and the idea is to perhaps convince the California Endowment that they should fund it for the remaining 9 years of the 10-year program. That's my presentation. I hope I didn't run out of past time. Thank you very much. I think there'll be opportunities for questions later on.
Thank you, Eduardo. And we're actually want to keep to a timeline, so we actually do have an opportunity to have a good half hour worth of questions and maybe a little bit of commentary now or some observations from Anne about some of the things that are going on. Okay, at the end, sure. So we'll include Anne's comments at the end, no problem. Want to welcome Monique, standing up to the microphone.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I'm Monique Tseng with the City of Oakland, City Administrator's Office, Equal Access. My office focuses on language access, and today I'm here to talk about City of Oakland's Citizens Academy. And let me ask you everyone's a question first. How many of you has Citizens Academy in your organization? Good. For those that do not have a Citizens Academy, do you know what Citizens Academy is? No? Okay. Well, actually, you know, the Citizens Academy is very similar to what Joe just shared with you on the Youth Academy. There's, you know, different type, like the leadership type and the Youth Academy and Fire Academy, police and multilingual. And the leadership one is like the nonprofit organization, or maybe the chamber, they will organize it. It's not a city organize it. But then for the youth one, the City of Oakland has one. And we did it with the Mayor Summer Job Program. Because in summertime, the Mayor Program has recruited about 200 youth. They are getting paid and come to work in different offices. So we have staff to mentor them, so that we're thinking, since they are here for 8 weeks or 6 weeks, so we want to make sure that they will have a chance to learn besides working in the office, working in a cubicle, so that they know, they understand how the city wants. And also that's, you know, Fire Citizens Academy is like probably 10 weeks academy for people to learn about what firefighter does. And the police academy is similar to the fire one. And in Oakland, we do not have the fire one, but we do have the disaster preparedness one. And the police citizens academy, we recently did one in Cantonese. And the last one I say is Multilingual Citizens Academy. That's the one that I'm here to talk about, is the Cantonese Speaking Citizens Academy. This is the pictures that I want to share. It's the Cantonese Speaking Community of Oakland Response to Emergency. It's for the academy group that who graduated from the academy. They are interested to learn more about other academy so that they learn about the disaster preparedness. And this one is the reason we did the Cantonese Speaking Police Academy, so that they learn through different sergeant, different lieutenants who come and talk about, you know, what they do, what service they provided. So here I want to talk about the purpose of the Oakland Citizens Academy. We engage Oakland citizens with their city government by providing an interactive forum to learn firsthand information. So what does that mean? It means people who come to the Citizens Academy will have a chance to talk to the city officials face-to-face, informal. They can ask questions directly. And also they will learn how the city of Oakland is structured and managed, what the city's relationships to the county, state, federal government, Oakland Unified School District, and other public agency. So the speaker who come to present at the Citizens Academy, we have the mayor, we have the city administrator, we have all the department heads, and also we have the county supervisors, the state senate, and also Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who has come and speak to our participants. And what agency and programs are available with the city agency? So the department head and come and share with the people. Because I remember first when we do the Cantonese Speaking Citizens Academy, people were so happy and excited about it, because people that they have been living in Oakland for over 20 years, they have never learn where City Hall is. They have no idea what service the city is provided. They don't know what their right is. They thought they have no voice. But now, since we have the Equal Access Office, we're trying to make sure that we will provide the language access. That's why we did the Cantonese Speaking Citizens Academy in Cantonese. So we invite the speakers from all the departments, make sure that they will try to send someone who can speak Cantonese and explain to the participants what service and what they can do with the participants. Unless they don't have any staff who speak Cantonese, then we will arrange for interpreters who come. But then all the materials that we pass out has been translated. So who can participate in the academy? It will be anyone who live or work in Oakland. And what is the cost? Actually, it's free. We are not charging for our citizens anything. And I remember our council member, Henry Chang, he said that when we started Citizens Academy in 1997, we have to pay citizens to come and take it, to take the academy. But now it's changing. Now it's free, we only provide food. And the participant selection. In our English Academy, we have like probably 25 people who will apply every single time. So that's the perfect size. But for the Spanish one, it's like we have no choice. Once they apply, we'll take them. Because it's hard to get them to take the Academy. Because a lot of time, the Spanish populations, they do not believe in government. And they have experience and from their friends or family that if somehow they related to some government program, then they will be caught and sent back to their country. That's what they believe, and they don't believe in government. That's why, you know, if we want to, you know, outreach to the Spanish community, we need to get to know them, get to know someone who are in their neighborhood, who are in their own group, in their families, so that they will trust them from their family. Okay, this is the family friends, and then from there on, you have to, you know, build up the relationship. Okay, thank you. And here, you know, some picture. For our Citizens Academy, we have two field trips besides all the citizens, all the department directors will come and speak about what program they provided. We also have two tours. One, it goes to the Port of Oakland, and one goes to the city. It's a bus tour. We will take all the participants to go to all the planning, all the new projects, what is happening in Oakland, so that they will know. And the reasons that, you know, the Spanish Academy, it's hard to, they don't believe the government. So I did ask a lot of seniors who speak Spanish and ask them why. They say that, you know, besides that, you know, they are afraid that they will send back. A lot of reason is because they are too busy working for the living, and they do not leave the house because they don't drive, and they don't trust somebody who take care of their children. I'm gonna skip a lot because I wanna go to the Cantonese Speaking Academy. And our Cantonese one, we have an alumni association. Once they graduated, they form an alumni association. How we work together is they will do a lot of volunteer work afterward. Because, you know, when they come here, now they have access, they know that the cities can help them. They have direct access, they know the staff who speak their language. So that now they're very involved. They're volunteering in different occasions, like, you know, pass out gift to the seniors. And when Barbara Lee came to the Oakland for the town hall meeting, they're there. And when we have the holiday parade, they're there. And also when we have a petition against the city to increase the parking free, in 3-4 days, they collected 6,000 names. It's very easy now. It's like, if you want to ask me, can you get me some volunteers who speak Chinese and go to Chinatown and do something or to volunteer for a community event or get signature? It's easy. It's very easy now because, you know, we already build a relationship with them. It's like family. When I go to Chinatown, they will come to me and tell me my problem. Here's my problem. Here's my letter. Can you explain that to me? But then, you know, one thing that we really want to learn is, like, I'm not the one here to explain what I can do for them. Because, you know, from the Citizens Academy, they already learn from the department. They have their own contact. We explain to them what they can do, just like a regular English-speaking citizens. Because when they call in, they should have someone who speaks their language. Especially in Oakland, we require to provide English, Chinese, and Spanish language service. So that if particular, you know, department, they do not have the staff who speak the language, then we have the over-the-phone interpretation service. And I know that my time is coming up, but I really want to say that one thing. Because since, you know, we are doing so successfully on the Cantonese Speaking Citizens Academy, but not doing really well on the Spanish one, and the English one is pretty good, but then with now the budget crisis, how do we do the academy? How do we attract more people to come, especially, you know, the people who does not trust the government? So right now we are thinking to do an electronic version of Citizens Academy, which you can videotape the speaker from all agency. Whenever there's a new program, you can keep on adding because it's just a video clip that you can, you know, post it on your website. So you videotape it. And also, we're thinking to have the sign language on the side and the subtitle so that it covers the ADA access also. And hopefully this is helpful to everyone.
Thank you, Monique. I'd like to invite Charisse forward.
Good morning, everybody. It's still morning, right? I am Charisse Brandon from the city of Menlo Park. I've been the community engagement manager there for a little over a year. It's a brand new position in Menlo Park, and I'm just going to spend a few minutes with you this morning talking about how council sort of moved to the decision to create my position, and then what I'm charged with and the approach that we're using to develop community engagement model and culture, really, in our organization. So that's not the way I want to do that. Menlo Park had been doing, obviously, like I'm sure all of your communities, some form of community participation in decision making for many years. A lot of it was successful, and a lot of it left a lot to be desired. And I'm sure you've all had that same sort of experience. Sometimes processes seem to really work well, and sometimes you struggle a little bit with a decision. When it finally gets to council, you don't seem to have the community consensus that you really are looking for. We were doing everything from one-shot sort of surveys to calling one community meeting or even a public hearing, our community engagement process. So council had set a goal to explicitly develop an approach to community engagement as part of their annual priority setting, because they really felt like it was important to create a stronger presence around that idea. And in fact, several of our newer council members at the time had kind of run on that platform, more open, transparent, and I'm sure, again, many of you have that same sort of interest in your community for more openness and transparency. So our council started to move toward sustained community engagement by having a Coral Fellow come who studied best practices from around the world, in fact, put together a whole recommendation about approaches to community engagement, looked at the city of Ventura, as a matter of fact, and so it's so great that you're here as part of one of the best practices, and really boiled it down to saying, you know what, if you're really going to do this in a big way, you have to have a dedicated staff person. So they made the decision to hire a community engagement manager, did a national search, and here I am in California all the way from cold Michigan. So I'm very happy to be here. The idea that underlies my work then as the community engagement manager in Menlo Park is that it's not going to be successful at achieving the goal that the council has set out if I am the only one that does it. And again, I know that Anne approaches it the same way in Ventura. The idea is I need to be a coach, a mentor, a trainer, to help build the capacity of the entire organization to embrace the philosophies and the methodology of community engagement. And one of the main pieces that I just want to talk about for a few minutes this morning is the use of a consistent model with a supporting methodology for community engagement that the entire organization can use whenever a decision that's going to involve the community needs to be made. And again, sometimes maybe it's hard to believe that there is science and research and methodology around the idea of how does a body of people come to a supportable political will kind of public judgment. And the basic premise of the model is fairly simple, although we could spend an entire day, obviously, talking about the nuances of how you would create a community engagement process using this basic premise, but it's based on research by people like Robert Putnam, who writes about social capital and how we actually build community, people like Daniel Yankelovich, who writes a lot about how bodies of people move from something that he calls opinion to judgment and the phases that you go through. And so there's again, a lot of theory and research, but the basic idea says that people come to a situation or a problem to be solved with their lived experience. And this is people's values, their opinions, what they read in the paper, hear in the media, what their neighbors, friends, sort of, you know, co-workers, opinion leaders, folks that they respect and listen to. It's what you sort of believe that you understand and know about a problem when you first hear about it. And often what we see happens, and we all do the same thing, we wouldn't be community leaders if we weren't good problem solvers, we have sort of instant solution identification. And in fact, don't you often notice when you're approaching a community problem, people will say, and a simple example is, we need a street light, or we need it, right? We need an X, we need this service, we need that service. Before you even have had a conversation about, well, why do you think we need that? And in a neighborhood that I'm thinking of right now, people come and say, we need a street light, when really what they're concerned about is youth gathering on the corner. And we all know street lights are to light the street for traffic. And so come with a solution. We haven't even had a chance to talk about what the real problem is. So people's lived experience, though, is helping them kind of frame it that way. And the idea is that's what people begin with. It's opinion. Loosely, you can call it opinion. What you want to do, then, is take that lived experience and mix it up with technical knowledge and information. And that's what your staff or your consultants can bring to the table that will help people make a good decision about something. So it would be the fiscal impact analysis and the traffic analysis and the environmental impacts and the data about what alternatives are possible and all of the implications about the choices that people could make. So it's sort of a development of the technical alternatives. And with deliberation, that tiny little thing in the arrow, although it should be much bigger, as a part of your community engagement process, what you hope to get to is public judgment. And I know this is really small and hard to see. And again, I have cards if you want to get the, but when you design a community engagement process, using that sort of premise as your model, this is sort of the way it works. At the first phase of any community engagement process, you want to discover what people's lived experience has been or is. And people express that lived experience as their values. And so you ask questions like, what do you hope will happen as a result of this decision-making process? Or what are you worried about? Or what's your dream? Or what are you most concerned about is related to this situation? It's trying to get people to identify the problem. And the methodology that you would use in order to ask those questions, at this point, it's the very first step in a process, could be a survey. It could be sort of a y'all come meeting where people stand up at a microphone and, you know, ask questions. It could be a focus group. Those are really great methods to use when you're trying to discover people's hopes, fears, dreams, concerns, values. The second phase of the process, then, given the model that we just looked at in the last slide, is the information sharing. And the information or technical knowledge step also, though, includes a reflection back of what you heard people say their values are. And the reason that you want to make sure you do that in the process is because you're trying to bring people together to build a consensus, and you need to identify what is it that everybody agrees on right off the bat. And often in a community, the value-based information is something that brings people together because you want to start to build that consensus, and values will do that. So we always share back with people, here's what you all said you were most concerned about. Here's the results you all said you wanted to achieve as a result of this process. And then here's the technical information about what's possible, what we might do in order to address that problem, including best practices. Maybe it's selection criteria based on what you all said was important. Here's how we think you should choose which alternative is going to work the best. Here are all the fiscal implications, everything else I just talked about. So that step is sort of the boring step to people because it means you need a community meeting where you're talking at folks, or you need a newsletter, or you need a video, or you need something that's going to help people learn. We've done, you know, block walks. Expert speakers come and talk, lots of creative ways, bus tours, to different sites, lots of creative ways to get people to learn about possibilities and technical implications. The next step then is to actually work with people, generally in small groups like the tables that you're sitting at here, to make a choice, understanding that technical knowledge, understanding the consensus sort of level values, which of the alternatives is going to work best for the community. And people need to work that out together, because obviously people come to the problem solving with different ideas about what's going to work or what's not going to work. And often you'll see at this phase in a process a community meeting where you'll have a half an hour presentation of the technical information and then ask people in small groups some focus questions that will help you narrow the alternatives. And that's a very fast summary of kind of how it works, but the idea is you're moving people through a process to go from their individual opinion or beliefs to a public judgment, political will to act, that is going to build community as you're you know, moving through that process. The idea is working so far in Menlo Park. We've done it for several of our sort of major projects. Our redevelopment area implementation plan update recently occurred in our redevelopment area, which is our most blighted sort of struggling neighborhood. We had 150 people participate in our implementation plan update, which I understand apparently is amazing. So we're very excited about that. People struggled through prioritizing projects. Of course, because of the state takeaway, we don't really know if we're going to have any money to do anything, but we have a list of agreed upon prioritized projects for our redevelopment area. And then I was just again sharing with Ann last night, we had the third workshop of our downtown specific plan process. And Menlo Park, if anybody knows more about the community, again, because I'm new, but I understand that anything about development in Menlo Park has been a very polarizing issue in the past. And we had our third and final community workshop where we were, you know, back at the deliberation and choice step, and had an amazingly civil, narrowed focus conversation. There were a few people there that think you can't, have to have surface parking or the world will end. Other people who want to see more downtown vibrancy and public space, and so the plan was proposing, based on that input, some parking structures. Although there's still some polarization, it's clear that people felt heard in the process and understand that we're probably going to have at least one parking structure in Menlo Park. Woo! Yay! I know! But again, the first time apparently in 25 years or something where there hasn't been incredible polarization, people screaming, yelling, angry, leaving the room because we've used this process. And obviously there are other difficult decisions that were made about building heights and density that in the past have been very polarizing, and I'm still so excited from the meeting last night because it went really, really well. So again, in a nutshell, we could spend all day talking more about how this works, but that's Menlo Park's approach, and I'm happy to get emails or talk to anybody further if there are other questions.
Thank you, Sharice, and I'd like to invite Ann Halleck up here, and congratulations on those meetings, and we all sort of do those meetings, and having a smile on your face the next day is a good thing.
Yeah. Hi, thank you very much. My name's Ann Halleck. I'm the Civic Engagement Manager. That's actually my title. I'm from the city of Ventura in Southern California. So my thanks to Terry and to Greg for allowing me to be part of this. It's an incredibly important conversation that we have, and you know, Sharice said we could talk about it all day. It's something that once you're involved in it, you start to feel really passionate about. So it's very exciting. When I was talking to Terry about being part of this, we talked about why it's important to do this. And so, you know, you've seen examples of how people get involved and they want to stay involved. And when we're talking about sustaining engagement from the city perspective, you know, as Sharice sort of reference, we're talking about getting staff who are facing budget cuts to integrate public decision making into the projects. And how do we convince them? You know, it's like eating your vegetables. How do you convince them that it's good for them? And really what it comes down to eventually is being a good partner. When we're doing the same with less, when we're doing more with less, we're talking about going out to a community that is facing the same budget problems that we are. You know, everyone's tightening their belt. And the way that you convince them to be involved in something is that there's a payoff for them and that they're still going to be getting services that might otherwise be cut. But you're also talking about them getting a voice in something that they may not have had traditionally. And so we're talking about really delivering a payoff. It's a value proposition for your community to be involved in these things. And so our city council has been incredibly focused on this. And in fact, in the last 6 months, they've said that it's one of their highest priorities. And we have Councilmember Jim Monahan in the back. Hello. Thank you for being here. To train staff on this, to talk about why this is important internally. And this is training staff on engaging their colleagues when projects require interdepartmental collaboration. That's engagement that people don't think about too often. But also going out to the community and involving them in a way that's meaningful. And that tends to really be the challenge. And we talked about this sort of, you know, Gerardo from the education level with his youth academy. Monique is talking about, you know, involving people who, you know, their primary language is in English. How do you convince them that this is something that's going to be important for them? And really it comes down to the way that you choose to involve the community in the projects that you plan. You're not bringing them in at the end so that they can sort of give it the blessing. You're involving them up front. They're helping shape these issues. They're talking about this value that they have for what their community is going to be like. And so I brought handouts. It's a trifold handout that we've been using. Again, at the request of our city council, we're training staff and we're talking to them about how you create a plan that involves the community in a meaningful way. And so I have a whole bunch of these. You can grab them, you can take them with you. And it's been something that's had a huge payoff for us, just in terms of integrating this into projects in a very organic way. This isn't something that's a standalone. This is actually part of your project, and this is why it's going to be more successful. So I'm just very quickly wanting to give that comment. It's really exciting. I sound like a nerd, but Charisse is sort of a celebrity for me. It's really exciting to see what other communities are doing. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Anne. And now we can open it up for questions and for Q&A. There is a microphone in the middle of the room. I'm sure you have lots of questions. We're going to be recording this conversation as well, so maybe we'll have a podcast so this rich dialogue can be shared by more people. So, first question.
Well, I wanted to say my name is Joyce Kleiner, and I write a column called Civics Lessons, actually, for the Mill Valley Herald. And I'm really excited about what you guys have all talked about. It's all thrilling to me. The Youth Academy is an exciting idea. I also participated in Leadership Mill Valley, which was, you know, the Chamber of Commerce sponsored model. So I know about that, and wasn't quite as excited about the Chamber of Commerce sponsoring it. So I wanted to know more about other models for Civic Academy. And then I love the idea of having someone actually whose position is to engage the community appropriately and the opinion to judgment thing. My main question for you right now is, are there sources already created so that if Mill Valley wanted to do a Citizens Academy for either youth or adults, is there some kind of model or website or organization so we wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel? And the other question is, how could I get the high school interested in getting their kids to write about civics along with me in the newspaper?
Very good questions. And Gerardo, why don't you come to the table here and join in?
Get one of my business cards, and I will share with you and anybody else from soup to nuts on how we planned it, how we structured, how we convinced the departments to provide the coaches. That getting the departments across the city government is very important, getting the city manager's support, the city attorney's support. So I'd be more than happy to share with you how we did that particular model. So I'm not aware of any other kind of source with regards to that, but I'd be more than happy to share with you anything I have. And like I said, we are working on a new concept, the Health and Social Responsibility Summer Program for Youth, which is a civic engagement program as well.
Yes, thank you. Mine's somewhat along the same lines. Do you know of any publications that guide you on how to do this to get started, which I think that was the first one. The second one, do you use publications, any publications of the participants, for the participants that they must read a publication to prepare themselves for this type of engagement and preparation for learning civic activities of what they're about to take part of? Thank you.
Again, very quickly, there are seminars, and the assistant city manager, for example, had a workshop, very interactive workshop, on how city government is structured, and she designed it specifically for young people. Very interactive, that picture and all that. And so I have no problem at all sharing with all this information. And so they did get a binder, the students, with the curriculum and the materials for every seminar. We developed that from scratch. So it wasn't any kind of materials or anything. The only thing that was kind of academic was Professor Sun and Shine's orientation motivating talk, but he really didn't have any handouts. It was just an amazing way to kick off the program.
And I also believe that the League of California Cities is actually going to be part of the of like a curriculum, I believe, where we're going to help provide resources for cities.
I was going to say, if you're interested in the idea of how we move as a single person or a body of people from opinion to judgment, and you just want to read one book, it's called Coming to Judgment by Daniel Yankelovich. And that's, it's a little bit academic, but if you're interested in that topic, check that out.
Okay, just want to make sure. I'll state my dilemma, and then maybe an answer, you know, could be forthcoming. My name is Michael Karp. I'm from the city of Big Bear Lake, and that's a tourist community in Southern California, 7,000 feet up in the mountains. We're redoing our village. We have an economic plan for it, redevelopment plan, and people that get invited to city meetings first are usually the business owners, the property owners. That's usually about it. After the fact, the citizens, the regular, you know, residents of the valley get invited down. Our city keeps identifying the chief stakeholders as the business people and the property owners. I'm just wondering what your comment is on that, and are we going about that the wrong way?
I'm going to try to go back to my slide. I would say I think you are going about it a little bit the wrong way. It's a great idea to identify stakeholders, but you'll notice this little printing right here in the middle says open, honest, transparent, and inclusive. And fair process. Those three words, open, honest, and fair process. We believe that one of the requirements of moving to a true public judgment based on consensus in a community is that a process needs to be open from the very beginning, as Anne said, to anyone who wants to participate. And it's not up to you as the governing body to decide who cares about that issue. And so it's equal access to participation from the very beginning is, I think, the only way to avoid that kind of conflict.
I think I have a kind of a good follow-up to that is, I think, my name is Marby Lee, I'm from the city of Morgan Hill, And I think over the years we've had a pretty good attempt at trying to get the community involved. Unfortunately, what I've seen is we seem to get that same core of 100 or 200 people. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas or strategies trying to get the, I mean, we're a town of 40,000 people. How do we get the rest of those people instead of those same, not that we don't want to hear those same voices, but there's a whole big community out there that we want to hear from, and we never do. And we don't know how to get them engaged. I mean, that's why I'm here, but how do we grab those people who just don't have the time? Or
that's a great question, and there's two sides to that, and you sort of touched on the second one at the end of it, but for us, it's had a lot to do with harnessing social networks. And so this is something where, you know, if you're going to publicize a meeting, you know the local community councils, you know the local service organizations, you know the faith-based service organizations, and this is something where you notify the leaders of those groups, they're notifying their constituencies, and it's a networking capability that you don't have on your own. That's not something that you have the time to do that kind of outreach, you don't have the resources to do that kind of outreach, and you're right, you know, those 100 or 200 people, if you're lucky, sometimes for us, it's, you know, some of us, it's 3 or 4 people, but you're really making an effort to identify the people who aren't usually involved and extending that invitation to them through their own networks. And that really has a lot to do with what Monique was talking about with this idea of building trust. And then the second part of it is how you design your engagement programs. You know, you're talking about people coming. Well, if you're having it at 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon, you know, you're not going to be involving the people who work 9 to 5. You know, if you're having it in the afternoon, is there going to be childcare? You know, things like that, where when you're actually designing these participation programs, you're making sure that you're not accidentally excluding people who might want to be involved. And that really, that comes a lot more from experience. That comes a lot more from hearing on the back end, oh, I wanted to go to that, but I couldn't make it because. And really having your process be a learning one as well.
A really creative technique that I've used, not yet in Menlo Park, so I'm not sure it would work, but it worked in Michigan, was something called a meeting in a box, where we recruited sort of those usual suspects, people who you know you can count on to be involved, but asked them to convene a meeting in their home, church, neighborhood school, business, some comfortable place, and then we supplied all of the information that they needed to have a successful meeting. So maybe it was a DVD to play that had the technical information on it, focus questions for the group to work through, response sheets that could be turned back in. In some cases, we included popcorn and gift certificate to Safeway for, you know, refreshments or something like that. And then that way, each of your usual suspects was sort of asked to bring together 10 or 12 other people, and then that's how you kind of expand through those networks that we've all been talking about so you can move out into the community.
I think partly in the interest of full disclosure, I am the interim Strong Neighbors Manager here in the city of San Jose, so I haven't really jumped in yet, but I think one of the other strategies is also we go out to the community. So a lot of times when we schedule a meeting, it conflicts with, I mean, imagine a city the size of San Jose, conflicts with probably 5 or 6 other community meetings that are probably important. So we actually try to go to those meetings and actually bring staff and presentations and try to sprinkle ourselves around the city in the different council districts that we have. So sometimes, you know, you can invite them, but maybe they're not coming because they're at some other meeting. But we do tend to have the same kinds of people, usual suspects. That's one of the things that we've been really working towards, and also just having a progressive policy so that we actually have to notice, for example, beyond 1,000 feet or 1,000 feet beyond for a particular project that might have significant impact to communities, and that's just not just property owners, but the residents there as well. So those are some things to think about and how you engage folks so that people are given fair notice for meetings.
Hi, Terry Amsler with, oh, I'm sorry, no, go ahead, please.
What I want to say is when you want to engage someone, it depends on, you know, what topic, what subject it is. Who is your target audience? And we can, you know, rely on the media. Because, you know, for the Chinese community, the media is my number one help When I tell them some events, they will always in the events. They will come and report it. And also, we go to the community. We have, you know, different program. We have our disaster preparedness training in the community. We have our crime prevention, because, you know, it really depends on, you know, what the citizens would concern in that neighborhood in that particular time. We have to make sure we take that opportunity and outreach to them. Then they will come back to you.
Hi, I'm Terry Amsler with the Institute for Local Government. I just mainly wanted to respond to the resource question, but I wanted to just on this topic briefly, and it really just parallels what you folks are all saying on this question of reaching beyond the usuals, sort of monitoring public engagement work around the state. There need to be four basic things, and it's all situational and depends on where you are, but rules are go something like this, I think. Start early. It's not 2 weeks before a meeting. You've got to really start early and make this a commitment. Set goals. I mean, what do you, there's all kinds of beyond the usual. There's a lot of folks. Who are we talking about? Develop good working partnerships with folks that have legitimacy, credibility, you know, reach out into those communities, and be flexible. Several of you referred to about your response, your approaches for public involvement. Those four things, I think, which you've all said, kind of are a good set of rules for really trying to work to reach out beyond the usual. Last thing, quickly, I direct something called the Collaborative Governance Initiative at the Institute for Local Government, and the Institute is the nonprofit research and resources arm of the League and the California State Association of Counties. We have on our website a list of all the youth commissions we've found in California so far, about 100 of them, and the contact names. We're beginning little by little to try to collect things like their charters and things like that. We also have a list of all the citizen academies we've found so far, and these lists are never completely up to date. It's a rule. It's never completely up to date, but you will get, there's ones that are run through police departments primarily, or cities, or through leadership organizations, and we're trying to update that, but you may look there, and that might be helpful to you. And we also, if you have any questions about public engagement, one of our, my job is to be useful, so if I can ever be useful, give me a call. Yes. Thank you for, that would be good to know, wouldn't it? www.ca-ilg.org.
Carol Dutra Bernacci, Vice Mayor, Union City. My question is, how do you go about trying to get somebody to have an open mind? Because this is all about civic engagement, of course, and what we've got going on in Union City is a conversation about a particular parcel of land, and we have had several folks of the public, we've had several public meetings, but at these meetings there's been several of the same folks showing up expressing their concerns, which is a good thing, but unfortunately we do have some folks that don't want to listen to those folks and take the attitude, well, you're here and we're going to assume the people that aren't here are the people that support what's being proposed for this land use. So that's my question. Do you have any suggestions about how to get people that seem to have already made up their minds to open their minds and consider other possibilities? The closed-minded person, I guess.
This is not just my experience in youth and local government. It's more my experience in 20 years of working in city government. You know, this is a very common thing when you're dealing with the public, and to me, an important technique, and it's a personal style, is what do we mean by being an active listener? And when someone is not listening to what you're saying, they don't believe that you're listening to what they're saying. And you need to make them feel that you are listening to what they're saying. And it's not just you. I think it's their experience in dealing with other city officials, city government. They've already made up their mind that City Hall is against them. And so someone needs to develop trust with them and engage and really listen to them. And sometimes they're not telling you what really is bothering them. So you need to have questions and have a dialogue so that it's an enjoyable conversation. Maybe not the first time, but the third time perhaps. It starts becoming a little enjoyable. It does take time. I think it takes time and it takes effort and it takes sincere effort. We're also so busy that sometimes you don't want to deal with someone that's close-minded, and it's just go to someone that is more open-minded, and it's the low-hanging fruit that gets us into trouble when it comes to so many different things, including civic engagement. And the bigger challenge in my mind are the quiet people, the timid people. They're the ones that are needed in order to be able to have more of a balance and more authentic democracy, in my opinion.
Thank you.
Did you want to respond also, Charisse?
We have found that the questions that we ask at the very beginning of a process often about values help people feel heard and really help with the active listening, just like Gerardo was saying. If you ask questions of people like, what result do you want to see come out of this? And sort of, it sounds like you're a five-year-old, but why, until you can kind of back people up to the core value and then help later in the process them understand how they can get to that core value by making choices among other alternatives. It really kind of helps open up their mind a little bit more than the problem of coming to a situation with your solution already in the bag. And that's often what people polarize around.
Just to add to that, it sounds like just kind of good old-fashioned conflict. And I think we tend to, I think we tend to like not want to confront conflict. But Uri and Fisher have some really great books on like getting to yes, getting past no. But it essentially sounds like people have their positions and you want to get them into actual their common sort of issues that they want to address. So getting people out of positions and into actually what they're, and the conversation on values is one of the ways to do it. So next question.
Thank you. I have a question, but I want to make a statement first, if I might. After serving almost 20 years in public office, I feel that building community, whether it's through neighborhood block leader programs or through educational programs, is extremely important. I serve in the city of Cupertino, where the majority of our population at this point in time is Asian background, and having this network and the staff willing to go the extra mile to help build that community and bring the, at that point, mostly non-English speaking Asian population into our processes has been extremely important. I think as we go further in this state, we know that the Latino community is the fastest growing population in this state. And I guess my question to the woman from Oakland, first, let me just say I was a little surprised to hear your comment that Spanish-speaking people don't believe in government. I think that's absolutely untrue. And I was taken aback sitting in my seat when you said that. You went on to further say we have to try and think about doing things differently with different communities. I wholeheartedly agree with you there. That's what we've practiced in the city of Cupertino. And in fact, I think many cities have practiced that as they've seen their populations diversify. And so I'm hoping that the city of Oakland does go forward and figure out, because you have a very long-standing, frankly, Latino population there, and that you're not just stopping at this point, but I'd be interested in hearing what ideas your office has right now to reach out to the Latino population, and if there's anybody maybe in the audience that could help your office do that, that would be, I think, advantageous for your office. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Well, actually, I just, you know, share that information with you. It's because it's not my comment. It's like when I talk to the Spanish-speaking seniors, I ask them, why do you think that it's not successful? Why do you think that the people is not interested to come? And that's what they told me. But then still, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, we are stopping not to try. That's why, you know, I'm saying that now we're trying to, you know, do an electronic version of Citizens Academy so that we could include more people. They can do the Citizens Academy in their own time and learn whatever topic they want in their own place. And we still, you know, we'll work with the library in the Spanish-speaking area, And also we will work with the CPO and make sure that, you know, we'll outreach to them, and I'll talk to the neighborhood service coordinator because, you know, they are meeting with them monthly so that they already build a relationship. We're trying from that end. But then what I say difficult is it's hard to get them come together in the same time with a group of a certain number of people, because in our past experience, we always get less number than the other academy. Like, for example, if we have 20 people interested, if they started the academy, the first day they have 20 people, second time is like lesser, lesser, and lesser, and the last day it becomes only 5 or 6 people. So that's why I was saying that earlier.
And I can add maybe a little bit to that, what we're doing here in San Jose. And I think when you try to organize around issues, you tend to have those types of results in participation. So once you resolve the issue, then people kind of go away and say, okay, my issue's sort of done with, and I can go about my business. What we've been doing in San Jose is actually really trying to outreach and finding and identifying those people in the community where there is those networks, where there are recognized leaders inside the community who are also Spanish-speaking or monolingual Spanish-speaking. We're really working with those populations, and we do that because we have bilingual staff that on board that actually go and work in the communities and know those people. So we're actually seeing some really great success in some of our neighborhood association groups, where it's very neighborhood-centric, so we're trying to really get down to that sort of block level of groups, and I think we've actually had built some really great relationships and some friendships. But I think if you're organizing around issues, once your issue's resolved, then people tend to feel like they've been heard or their business is done. If you're actually trying to build relationships, then you tend to have these lasting sort of groups or civic organizations that you can draw upon and build those relationships and maybe just go not and then you can actually go from issue to issue or need. So that's kind of what we've been working actually here in San Jose in the Strong Neighbors program. But I thank you for your comment. And then maybe the last question.
I'll make it quick. Good afternoon. I'm Carrie Burns. I'm the Assistant City Manager in Daly City. Welcome to San Mateo County. One of the questions that had come up is whether or not there are any publications about civic engagement, and I'm sure there are many, but the International City Managers Association, on their website, there are a number of publications, books, pamphlets that talk about the civic engagement process. So I would encourage you or your city manager to provide you with that information. I'm sorry? Of course, International City Managers Association, and I think the website is www.icma.com. Or .org, I beg your pardon, .org. It's a plethora of information. My question is for Monique. With regard to the Citizens Academy that you do for Cantonese speaking, the actual mechanics of how that dialogue and conversation occurs, does the department head make the presentation and then does a translator translate, or does the translator actually provide the entire session? Monique, as you're getting up there, I just want to congratulate and thank everybody for the great work you're doing. It's very, very important work, and it's about time that we get re-engaged with our communities.
For the department, if the director who speaks Chinese, of course, we want him to speak Chinese, but then most of our director does not speak Chinese. That's why if the director will come, then we will have interpreter. But then we also tell the director, when you come, since you don't speak the language, it will be great if you can bring a staff who speak the language so that the citizens can make the direct contact. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank our panel and the rich conversation discussion we've had. Give them all a round of applause, please. And I want to thank Terry Amsler for inviting all of us here to talk about the things that we like to do. So thank you very much again.